Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, have we at last reached a tipping point in the discussion around climate change? The news will be full of Extinction Rebellion protests for the next 2 weeks, but those aren't the only signs that demands for a more sustainable world are gaining traction. To discuss that and the implications for investors, Tom Stevenson is here. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. The roads of Westminster are currently blocked by Extinction Rebellion protesters calling for much more to be done to mitigate climate change. It also happens to be Good Money Week, when the focus is on putting our money to use in a way that helps rather than hurts the world around us. It feels then like demands for better sustainability in our own lives and at a governmental level are gaining traction. Are they really, and is it enough? To answer that, I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity, who will also explain what investors can do to put their money to use ethically. Tom, I mentioned the ongoing Extinction Rebellion protests. That's what's going on this week. But we have been here before, haven't we? Is there really anything really to suggest that what we're seeing is different this time in terms of the action that might get taken?
Well, I think there possibly is. I think we're at a bit of a tipping point, and I think we're at a tipping point in terms of the public perception of the scale of the issue and the problem that we face. And I think what makes me think we're at a bit of a tipping point is when you look at these Extinction Rebellion protests, you know, despite what the Prime Minister said today about crusties and hemp smelling tents or whatever. Actually, if you look at the people who are increasingly getting involved with this, they're people who you wouldn't naturally think of as rebellious types. Yeah. They're people who you know, at the ends of their careers, you know, parents, grandparents. So it does feel like we're at a bit of a tipping point. But I think you're absolutely right that what matters is a few big things. It doesn't matter, actually, that we do a bit more recycling or, you know, we get on our bikes and cycle to work. What matters is that governments and companies actually start making big decisions which are actually going to make a difference.
Yeah, actually, on the Extinction Rebellion sort of coverage, it was a bit depressing, actually. I mean, I saw the Boris Johnson comments, but also, you know, read articles this week about from people who essentially made the point, yes, so I don't particularly agree with them, but isn't it annoying that these crusties, you know, that whatever they said, you know, Henriettas with nose rings out on the streets of London. And of course, it's easy to cliche protesters and say, well, you know, they're a particular type of person that goes out onto the streets. But I agree with you. I think behind that, underneath that, is far more support. That generation or the young people protesting. And there's older people, of course, but the young people protesting, there's also lots of people who are slightly older than them that also have exactly the same concerns about climate change. You know, this does seem to be a sort of a generational issue.
And that's why I think that these current protests are very important, because I think there is a real danger that the sort of upswell of support and goodwill that people have towards this could be tipped the other way if the protests go the wrong way. And, you know, it's really important that they continue to strike the right tone and to keep that support.
Yeah, and obviously it's not the only thing that's going on. Greta Thunberg is a name that people are going to be familiar with, speaking at the UN. But isn't it the case that those sorts of voices have been heard before? And it has been easy, or certainly governments and international bodies like the UN, they've had a track record of basically ignoring those voices. And obviously, there's been some backward steps in terms of things like the Paris Climate Accord as well. Is the thing to watch more that there's lots of changes that are going on in our lives, driven at a corporate level, because it's often where those measures fall, that actually indicate there is change on climate change? It just might not be on the streets of Westminster that you see it?
Yes, I think there is a change happening at the corporate level. And I think importantly, there's a change happening in our industry as well. I think the investment industry has changed its view on environmental considerations and broader, you know, what we call ESG, the social and governance aspects of sustainability as well. It's not just about the environment, but that's what we're talking about today. And I think that, you know, investors are increasingly seeing that taking seriously these environmental, social and governance issues is a reflection of the quality of a company and indeed its sustainability, in the sense of sustainability meaning its ability to last through the years and generations, which ultimately is what an investor is looking for. So I think what we're seeing is that companies are responding to that because they know that if they cannot demonstrate good behaviours in these three areas, then investors are going to vote with their feet and move away. That will mean that their cost of capital rises. That will mean it's harder for them to make profits, and it becomes a downward spiral. So good ESG behaviour can be an upward spiral, or it can be a downward spiral. So we're seeing it just this week. We've had a number of examples. Unilever, for example,
yes,
made a commitment to reducing the new plastic which it's responsible for. I think the figure is 700,000 tons a year. It's an enormous amount of plastic. It's committed to reducing that by half by the year 2025. So, you know, that's a very, very significant step.
Yeah, that's an interesting area, the plastic. That seems to be an area where people are sort of buy that as an environmental issue that they need to do something about. You know, we used to ban on plastic straws, which I sort of assumed was there. It's not there in England until next year.
Mm. But I think the interesting thing about plastic is, yes, people have bought into it. And why have they bought into it? Well, because actually it's not that difficult. It doesn't impinge that much on your life to say, okay, I'm going to take a bag with me to the supermarket. Yeah. You know, I'm going to buy fruit and veg loose or whatever. I think the really interesting thing is whether we as people and as individuals and as society can do the difficult things. So, for example, I looked at the figures for this, and the impact of one transatlantic flight on the climate is, I think it said that you would have to recycle for 8 years to simply match the impact of one transatlantic flight. Yeah. It's more than going vegetarian, for example. You know, it's more than all of these. It's more than buying an electric car. Now, you know, are we going to do that? I don't know. That's
well,
the tricky thing.
I suppose the counterpoint opinion there is that if you want to run a marathon, you probably can't do it tomorrow. But if you can't just walk down to the shops and back, you're never going to be able to do that. Do you know what I mean? You have to make a start.
You have to
be on the road to it. And on the point about plastics and Unilever, I mean, you can quite imagine what's happened there, that the Unilever people, probably several years ago now, have said, what are the big risks to our business models, our markets, and the way we operate? And clearly regulation around waste is one of those that they, Unilever, produce household staples. You know, the list is endless. PG Tips, Marmite.
Yeah. And of course, this is where government comes in, because, you know, regulation is all, you know, people will change their behaviours when they're incentivized for changing them, or they're punished for not changing them.
Yes.
And that's where government comes in, which is why, of course, it's so disheartening when you hear, you know, the Prime Minister's talking in the way that he's talking. It's really unhelpful.
Yeah. And that may change, I suppose, as voters with these concerns age and voters without these concerns aren't around to vote anymore. I suppose that's one way things could change. Right. Well, I mean, what does this all mean for your investments? I mean, I know, our team has done recent work around this. We've been speaking to investors about ethical investments, and it actually threw up some interesting insights into how normal people think about this stuff when it comes to investments. So what did we find out?
Yeah, so as you say, we've been out talking to some real investors about their investment lives and their hopes and fears and concerns. One of the subjects that we talked to them about was sustainability and whether it was really a part of their investing lives. It was quite interesting to us that most of them took sustainability seriously in their lives. They did the things that we've talked about, the recycling and the not using the car so much and maybe cutting down on their flights, but they hadn't yet really made the link. And until we make that leap, then, you know, we're not going to see the changes that maybe we need to see.
And I found it interesting that when they would, it was actually comparable to those other situations about recycling and day-to-day stuff. They sort of said, well, I want to show willing, I want to do this stuff, I'm broadly on board. I slightly question what difference it will all make, but you know, yeah, I'm sort of in a general sense willing. I just need a bit of a nudge.
Yeah, and I need it to be made easy for me. I need some help with this. I need to. So in a way, what they were saying was, you know, in the way that same way that people say, you know, governments need to act, they were saying, look, you as an investment industry also need to act. You need to create products for me to invest in, and you need to make it easy for me to find where these sustainable investments are. So I take that, you know, as a challenge as well for us to up our game in this area.
Yeah, and there are of course ESG funds out there. Some are very well established, been around for decades. There is variation, isn't there, though, between what each of these funds do, and there is. There's not a great deal of consistency on between what people call ESG funds.
No, I think that's one of the problems with this whole area is that, you know, there is not unanimity on what exactly it means. Mm. You know, so at one extreme, you've got funds which are excluding investments on the basis that they do things that they don't want to support. So they may be arms manufacturers or tobacco companies or publishers in pornography or you know whatever,
and they would, and those funds, they said, well, what we're saying is those funds are the sort of the lightest touch sort of ESG you know, concerns within those funds. Well, they'll just simply, in a very broad way, just no arms, no tobacco, just filter those out, basically, you know, tick a box so they no longer appear in the companies that those can invest in. And that's the sort of the most straightforward, but probably the least dark green of these ESG funds.
Yes, that's right, and probably less effective in a way in terms of changing the world than the other end of the scale, where funds investors are going out and looking for businesses which are actually making a difference. So this is sometimes known as impact investing.
Yes.
These are businesses which are, you know, making the world a better place rather than not making it a worse place.
Yeah, indeed.
So they might be, you know, in sustainable energy, there might be in wind and solar, that kind of thing, or they may be businesses with you know very progressive employment practices, for example, in terms of supply chains and that kind of thing.
And Pete, it's up to individual investors then to decide how they want to go about this. Do they want to go to the full bore, you know, let's only invest in the things that someone has decided is going to do good in the world, or are you just going to take a lighter touch and sort of have it sort of less weighing on your conscience that you're investing in something you don't agree with?
And indeed, there is a kind of middle way, which actually, by the by, is the way that Fidelity has largely gone. Fidelity as an investor. Mm. Fidelity is starting to take ESG factors extremely seriously in its overall investment analysis process. So, and the reason for that is what I was talking about earlier on, that businesses which take these environmental and social and governance factors seriously are in the main better companies, and Fidelity has recognized that. So by looking for those factors, it's actually improving its ultimate performance. Because one of the great concerns about ethical investing, if you like, is that people think, well, actually, I'm going to pay a price for this. That, you know, yes, my conscience may be clear, but I'm going to lose money. And I think increasingly people are realizing that that's not the case. You know, doing the right thing is also good business. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I should bound to say, some people will look at the opportunities on the flip side of all this and think, well, if lots of the market's all ignoring a fossil fuel company, maybe it's undervalued. I happen to look at the share prices of BP and Shell today, plus 6% yields, 13 times price to earnings.
But you're right. It's not a simple equation. And I think just quickly, I just talk about this idea of flight shaming, which I think is quite interesting, because this is where people it's happened in Scandinavia to start with. This idea that, you know, people are embarrassed about taking unnecessary flights, so they at the margin they're just taking fewer of these flights. And you think, well, you know, that's a pretty marginal change. It doesn't make that much difference, but from an investment perspective, the important consideration is that for a business which has high fixed costs and low margins, like the airline business, you only need a small reduction in your top line to completely devastate your profits. So our analysts here are looking very closely at the whole airline business and whether this flight shaming has the potential to spread beyond Scandinavia, because it could wreak havoc with the airline industry's profitability. But as you say, that shift in sentiment can also create opportunities. There are some good airlines which have been sold down with the others.
Yeah.
And, maybe there are opportunities there.
And that the flight shaming situation is an example where things could change very quickly, because obviously lots of companies... I was listening to a discussion about this topic and people explaining that business travel is a huge part of air travel in general, maybe even a major part.
Mm-hmm.
And were it to be the case that large companies all over the world just simply say, if it was suddenly in vogue for them to say, we're not going to fly anyone.
Yeah,
you know, we've got the technology.
Yeah,
not to
a video conference.
Exactly, which of course people have said for years, but it hasn't completely killed off business travel. However, if that were to change very quickly, I would fear for airlines in that situation, and it can change quickly like that.
Yeah, it can change very quickly. The sort of zeitgeist can change, extremely rapidly, and that would be devastating.
Yeah,
or. Depending on how you look at it, it would be fantastic.
Yeah, indeed. Now, to help a bit with some of these choices around ESG funds, Fidelity has pulled together a list of the most popular environmental, social and governance funds, which is a great starting point for all of this if people are interested. And that is available at fidelity.co.uk. Tom, that's all we have time for. I'm sure we're going to return to this again and again. But for now, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Ed.
Been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.